Okay, today we'll continue with this discussion about, well, especially about Yang Baxter, and see a few more of the consequences that come from it. Actually, wait. Maybe I don't want that one, it's still wet. before I start, I decided I would ask, are there any questions about anything we discussed last time? I know there was a... Oh, okay. I don't want to break it, so let's leave it for now. Were there any questions about... I know there was some confusion about this like idea of putting things on a cylinder, which is fair. Are there any other questions that were about our class last time? It's also been pointed out, I think I probably screwed up some indices somewhere, so I apologize about that. As I was just saying to Tipra, I mean, as a mathematician, to me, these pictures are nicest when you don't write any indices down. That way I know I won't make a mistake, but as soon as I start trying to write them, I know I will. So hopefully that won't happen today. Okay. So in the last lecture, we saw that what do we want? We want our Boltzmann waves to depend on some extra parameter, Z. And if we sort of satisfy the Yang-Baxter equation, we also assumed unitarity, but that's actually not necessary to derive this proof. Then we get this nice result that the transfer matrices commute. So basically what we'll talk about today is, well, we talked about transfer matrices. We also talked about monodromy matrices. We might ask, what sort of relations do they satisfy? And that's what we're going to talk about. Before that, I mentioned last time that in certain special cases, there's a connection between this sort of theory with the vertex model and the spin chain, XXX spin chain. So I thought I would just very quickly try to describe what's going on there, since it's, I think, an interesting example. So my knowledge of this system is even sketchier, but I believe what's going on is we have a sort of discretized system again, but this time is taken to be continuous. So it's maybe slightly more natural, whereas we've kind of discretized time in our vertex model. Here this is some system where this is also coming from a lattice of of k points arranged roughly in a circle, or you can think of them linearly. Where we have these local Hilbert spaces. C2. Which are sort of spin up or spin down. I'll just write them that way. Sorry, maybe I should ask, has everyone seen the XXX spin chain before? No. So, well, it's another system. This one is actually related to, I haven't written down the Hamiltonian or anything yet, but this is some sort of model for ferromagnetism, as far as I understand. So it's supposed to model spin up, spin down states. The states in a linear strip of iron under magnetism. Yeah. which I don't completely understand, but so this tells us then that the total Hilbert space is going to be just a bunch of something like C2 tensor C2 tensor. And we can think that these are arranged in a circle. Again, sort of, we have our k points. So here's our k local Hilbert spaces. And we can label them, I guess I'll start from 0. So 0, 1, dot, 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 to k minus 1. And we think of this sort of mod k. So, you know, these effectively are wrapped in a circle, but we're just writing it like this. So. And to write things down, we want to write down some matrices. Oh, no. I guess this is probably why this one was up there. Oh. Has this happened before, I assume?
Maybe.
Give it a bit of a push, yeah. Thank you.
And perhaps leave it up there?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's keep that one out of the way. Okay. So you should think that these spin up or down states are sort of like, again, neighboring atoms of some sort. And then the Hamiltonian that's going to describe the dynamics here is kind of local in that it's just describing interactions between neighbors. So, but to write it down, so we consider these 2x2 matrices, which I'll use the math notation. So E, this is our SL2. this one, let's do H. So here's some 2x2 matrices. They will act on these local Hilbert spaces. Again, this is something related to SU2, but it doesn't matter so much. OK, and then the, well, we're going to talk about XXX in a moment. There's something called XXZ spin chain. Is the following. So it's all written in terms of these acting locally on the sites up there. So it's the expression. So we have a sum over the sites, and then I'll write these and then hopefully explain them. What do I mean here? For example, the subscript tells you which site this matrix is acting on. So they just act on a single factor. And of course, this is where the mod k part is important, because of course, once we get to the top here, we're going to have fk. So that's back to 0. Make sense? And c here is a parameter. Now, OK. So you can think a bit about what these do. These two matrices, E and F, have the effect of sort of swapping spin up or down with each other. So for example, this one takes spin, say, down to spin up. This F matrix takes spin up to spin down. And then H just acts diagonally in that basis. So everything's with respect to spin up, spin down. So you can think about what these are doing then. Sort of here we have a one factor at the ith position, and then we have its neighbor. And these sorts of matrices are sort of switching the spins. Meanwhile, this one is measuring whether the two states are spin up or both spin down. And so by thinking a little bit about, say, what happens when C is very large or very small, I mean very negative, you get different behavior for this, which is meant to mimic, I guess, magnetism. So, well, maybe in the interest of time, I won't say more, but this is supposed to model ferromagnetism. Okay, so, but there's this Hamiltonian. And the case when C is actually 1 is called the XXX spin chain is set. Okay. So why are we talking about this? Well, this is a model that people are interested in. It's already there. An understanding. And in fact, there's a connection between this and the vertex models we've been talking about. So remember, for the vertex models, we need to specify the number of spins and all this information, all the Boltzmann weights. As you may guess here, well, we have some action on a Hilbert space, which is C2 tensored a bunch of times. We've seen things like that come up when we take n equals 2, right? The number of spins is 2. Then our monodromy matrices and our transfer matrices will act on C2, say, tensor k times, just like that. But we really actually here want to take specifically the R matrix that we also talked about last time, which is this Yang R matrix, or rational R matrix, which we wrote down. So we take this one with only 2 possible spin states. And then we use it to write down these transfer matrices. Okay. And what's the idea is we can expand the corresponding transfer matrix to this data in powers of 1 over z. So this will look like 1 plus 1 over z times something plus 1 over z squared times something else, and so on. So everything is, remember, is expressed in terms of Boltzmann weights. So in fact, it will just end at some point because there's only going to be finitely many things that appear if you think about the transfer matrix. I know I'm doing this quickly, so sorry. then one of the consequences of
why should there be only finite numbers? I guess there are finite numbers of R's in T's, right? So.
Yes, that's right. So I think if we have, if there are K lines, then we'll have K copies of this matrix sort of multiplied. And so in fact, this would go to, hopefully this is correct, this should go to K. And actually it won't go any further, but. Makes sense. So. And again, so this is some linear operator on the same vector space, the same Hilbert space that's right there. And as a consequence of the relation that we derived last time, these commute. This tells us actually that all the coefficients commute. In fact, in this case, it's equivalent. So again, you think of writing down T of Z here in this way, and then writing down T of Z prime in the same way. And intuitively anyway, if you're allowed to vary Z and Z prime arbitrarily, it must be that actually all the coefficients commuted to begin with. At least we can convince ourselves that. So what's the point? Well, what we'd like to do, the conclusion is actually that if we could rewrite this Hamiltonian somehow involving these T's, the coefficients, then we would get to some number of commuting elements. So here's the fact. This H XXX, so in other words, when C is equal to 1, this can be expressed as actually a polynomial in these matrices. Somehow. So some sort of expression for that. This Hamiltonian is something involving the coefficients here. And since all of them commute, well, it follows that actually they all commute with HXXX. So and this is the sort of thing we want, because now we have a bunch of commuting charges, I guess you could say. So this lets us solve the system. Yeah.
For T2, that corresponds to the second horizontal line.
It'll involve. It'll actually involve stuff at all the horizontal lines, because you have the right intuition, but actually. You could say every single horizontal line contributes one of these matrices. So it will happen when you take some pair of the lines. If there are three lines, there's actually going to be a contribution from 1 and 2, 1 and 3, 2 and 3. And if you want the coefficient of something else, like z to the k, that's the one where all the lines are contributing. Does that make sense?
Okay, so for T2, it could be the first two lines of contributing?
Yeah, it could be first
five
two
lines contributing, or
sorry?
Could you have five lines contributing?
Not to that one, no. Only some pair. Yeah. But they might not be beside each other.
Okay, so it's two lines, but where they are doesn't matter.
Yeah. And likewise the coefficient of z cubed, 1/z³, it will be some three lines.
And is there a z dependence in it too?
These T's?
Yeah.
No, so these are actually independent of Z. Yeah, sorry, I should have been clear about that. Yeah, these are just some matrices you could write down in principle. Any other questions? So, okay, if you haven't seen the XXX spin chain before, maybe this doesn't seem so illuminating. And as a mathematician, it's hard for me to motivate why it's interesting, but this is a case where we see a little bit more structure actually coming from the vertex model than we might have just seen if we talked about this Hamiltonian by itself. So. Okay, so this is the sort of thing we want actually, is to have a whole bunch of commuting charges. okay.
So technically, this is not an integrable model because there are an infinite number.
Yeah, that would be one complaint. So if I had neglected to mention that this terminates, right? I think one way to think about it maybe is if you imagine the spin chain length going to infinity, then in the limit there are infinitely many. So maybe that'd be one way to interpret it. I mean, I believe in general, if you have some sort of finite dimensional system, you should expect sort of only finitely many independent conserved charges. So these are all kind of independent in a way, but maybe that's all I can say.
Are they not enough? This spin chain is finite.
Sorry. that's a very good question. No, I think they are enough. If the k is fixed. Now I'm hesitant if I claim that correctly. Okay. Okay. So, our goal then is to move on and now talk about relations between these monodromy matrices instead. So here we'll still be assuming, just to be clear, that our Boltzmann weights depend on this parameter. So has the three properties I mentioned last time. So the first one is, I think we called it symmetry. So I won't write these down again, but remember, this lets you sort of reflect in a horizontal line. Second, it should be unitary, which tells us somehow that it's related to its inverse. And it should also satisfy the Yang-Baxter equation. And to remind you pictorially, the second and third ones, I think, needing to use this first tell us stuff like, say, if we have some lines like this, you can kind of undo them. Oh, I was hoping that the chalk I brought would be better, but. These are somehow oriented, perhaps. So this is sort of encoding unitarity, and the Yang-Baxter equation was this triangle type picture. Do it. Maybe green, or is green too close to blue? Are those visible at all? Same equations from last time. A little thick. Okay. And so on. Okay. Also, just to remind you, the monodromy matrix depends on choice of the spatial boundary conditions. So, somehow is mapping things here to things here, but we have this extra labeling at the top and bottom. And also, because our R matrix depends on Z, we sort of get a Z dependence. So I should say that again, too. Here we're going to vertical lines will carry the parameter Z. Just as last time. And the sort of thing that we have in mind is to try to commute two of these monodromy matrices past each other, sort of in the same flavor as the calculation we did last time with the transfer matrices. Okay. So our goal analyze the difference something like, well, we could take two of these transfer matrices. Yeah, what variables? R, S. So here's the product in one order. These are both operators on the same space. And we could put them in the other order. So this time we won't find that they commute generally, but we can still make sense of this problem. So how to do it. Okay. I'll try to use colors. So, is that really visible? It's blue. So I want to write down, say, let's say this product in that type of form. There's one confusing thing, but I'm going to follow the convention that each of these transfer matrices, you think of sort of the incoming states on the left and outgoing on the right. So the composition, confusingly, ends up being backwards. I apologize for that. But so actually, if we want to write down this product, you know, if you think of linear transformations, you're applying this one first and then that one, right? Or vice versa. So actually, it's R, S, I, J, and our vertical lines still carry these labels. So it should be Z prime here and Z there. It's not such a big deal to put them the wrong way. Yes, yeah, that's right. Reserve, exactly. Discretizing time left to right. You might do the opposite convention if you prefer, but. And in fact, in Kevin's notes, he did, so it's quite liable I will screw up something somewhere. Okay, so what did we do last time? This is very similar to the picture, right? Where we had a transfer matrix and another one. Well, we pulled these strings through each other using unitarity. So we could do the same thing here. See, so somewhere this could go over like this. Somewhere there's a gap, right? So this is using unitarity. So, and all labels are the same. R, I, S, J. Z prime Z. And then we could do the same thing as before too, where last time we used the Yang-Baxter equation to sort of pull these lines through the triangles, right? So we sort of slowly stretched it out. So let's do the same thing. Using Yang-Baxter over and over again to get to finally the case where, well, we can pull this one through. So eventually we can get to the state where the crossing appears right at the beginning and right at the end, just like last time. Actually, I should draw it. Well, let's draw it this way and then I'll redraw it in a second. Okay. Same data. So maybe it's nicest to think about this. I'm not rewriting anything here. Just drawing it a little differently. So we have first the two lines cross, and then they go down. That. And OK, let's keep the data here, S, J, R, I. And maybe for clarity, it's helpful to remember that sort of what's going on here is something involving an R matrix. So this is not strictly needed, but just to remind ourselves, sort of, there's something with the R matrix here and something there. Make sense? OK, so these pictures encode a lot of information, right? We can apply this to any sort of incoming state and get something on the outside, outgoing, rather. The problem that, well, it's not really a problem, but what happens here, as opposed to with the transfer matrices, there's this argument that this wraps on a cylinder and you could, you know, undo the crossing with unitarity again. Here we can't because the boundary conditions are fixed. They may not be the same. So, you know, if S and R are equal, actually, even then, we can't do it, but we would be closer. So this is actually as good as we can do. And this is actually exactly what we want. So this tells us in equations, this tells us what? Well, what's the point? So on this side, we started with this composition of operators. So here we want to have something about the other composition of operators. But what you'll notice is that does appear here, so long as you forget this part at the top and the bottom. So in the middle, between here and here, is exactly the right-hand side. So OK, I'll start on another board. So on the left-hand side, we had M, I, J. So first we did M, R, S, Z prime. Then we did the other one. And on the right-hand side, let's see. I should actually maybe draw it with some extra variables. So it's helpful to put in the dummy variables now that sort of label what's going on at these states. So when we compute partition functions, remember, we're going to end up summing over sort of all possible stints here and here and here and here. Let me reproduce the picture again. Most of the interesting stuff is at the top and the bottom. So let's just sort of contract the middle a little bit. So again, here just notationally, let me put R. Not strictly needed, but OK. And we have our R. It's supposed to be S, J, I. And this is labeled by Z prime. So Z. And finally, so again, this may be helpful to just introduce some labeling. I'll try to follow Kevin. So you call this the spins that will sum over here, A, B, C, D. Oops. So the point is that in the middle, if we forget the top and the bottom involving the R matrices, we see the sort of right-hand side that we want. But now we should really incorporate these extra variables. So what does that look like? OK. So remember, left to right. So the first thing we see is A, C with a Z. So actually, something like B, B, Z prime, A, C, Z. That's going on in the middle. But this hasn't taken into account the two ends. And here's where I may screw up indices. So there should be an R matrix. There's one corresponding to the top, and there's one corresponding to the bottom. So they're both going down. So the first thing I believe is R, I, R goes to that, so we get B, I to A. And the crossing was Z prime and Z, so I think that gave us Z prime minus Z. I hope I got that right. And the bottom, there's something very similar. So sort of the two strands coming in. Remember, it's sort of important which one is to the left of the other. So it's sort of C going to J and D going to S. So C to J, D to S. And I think this time we should have the opposite variables. Hopefully I got that all right. That makes sense? If I got it wrong, I hope you can convince yourself that we could, we should be able to write down explicitly what this says, right? Okay. So that's actually what we want. This is the formula. It doesn't look so pleasing in general, I suppose, but one thing that's maybe worth pointing out is because of the unitarity assumption, it's actually possible to get rid of this left hand, the right hand one, and put it over here, or put the left one on the left up here. Another way to say the same thing is we could have started with a picture that looked like this and sort of slowly pulled the crossing down through it. That's another way to think about this. In mathematics, this is sometimes called the RTT relation, but maybe I should say that. This conflicts with our choice of variables, so I'm sorry about that, but it's called, it should be RMM relation. Normally in math, people tend to write T for transfer matrix, so it's very confusing here, but anyway, just in case you see this name. Any questions about that derivation? So here we've avoided this confusion about the cylinder, at least, but.
I mean, there's a comment you made earlier, and we talked about it. You said that the unitarity actually follows from symmetry. In case we can try to work it out in the tutorial.
Oh, yes, that might be worth doing. But no, I mean to say this comment was that the unitarity plus symmetry is what gives you that picture. Is that what you mean?
I mean, you know, the first picture on that board is the unitarity.
The first picture, but to get that picture to work quite right, I think you need to impose symmetry as well.
Okay. What would you for that to work right?
I think if you only assume that the R matrix satisfies unitarity, I don't think when you write this down that the unitarity will imply this relation. I may be mistaken.
I mean, is that picture, you had an equation for unitarity, right?
Yes, yeah, in terms of indices and so on. You know,
that is an assumption, but we need the assumption of symmetry for that picture to follow from that equation.
Yeah, yeah. So somehow we're being lazy when we say that this is unitarity. I was being lazy. Really, you should say symmetry was just assumed the whole time, and then it follows. So really, it's sort of one and two implies that, I think. It could be I'm misunderstanding, you know, just misintuiting the relation, but I would give it a try.
Sorry, symmetry is the Z minus Z relation,
right? Yeah, I think so.
That's right. That sort of horizontally reflects, or not horizontal, diagonally reflects, but changes the sign of Z. That's right. It's also possible that I'm just wrong, but certainly unitary and possibly symmetry together applies that. Maybe you don't need the symmetry. I could be mistaken. Any other questions? Okay. Spending, going slowly as usual. So the case that is possibly most interesting is, so this, other than these three assumptions, we haven't actually said anything about what the Boltzmann weights, this R matrix, is. It could be anything, and you'll get this type of behavior. But you can look at this more explicitly if we take some particular R matrix. So the one that we want to talk about is Yang's R matrix, this rational R matrix, I also called it. So.
Presumably, all these R matrices and the T matrices follow from the Hamiltonian.
I'm sorry?
From a physical point of view, the R matrices and the T matrices should actually follow from a choice over Hamiltonian.
I think so, yeah. In the sense that I guess you should be able to recover the Boltzmann types weights, is that fair?
I mean, you know, it happens that T matrix should probably be some variation of the S matrix, for example.
Something, I think, of that type, yeah.
In physics, we usually compute that stuff.
Yeah. yeah, I think that's fair to say that we've sort of just gone at things the opposite direction. Okay, so in the case of the R matrix, just to write it down again, where R, I, J, K, L of Z is delta I, K, delta J, L. What is it supposed to be? I, L, J, K. So if we take this specific R matrix, then we could try to work out what we get when we substitute it in, right? Okay, I apologize. Maybe I'll try and do an actual example in a moment, explicit example. So what do we get? We find the following. So again, this is possibly where I'll make a sign mistake. If we do something like, let's see. Okay, I think it's right. KL. So it's possible to rearrange things. It's possible to rearrange this equation to put a commutator on one side and the remaining stuff on the other side. No, actually, this is wrong. Sorry. It's going to be one way or the other. So we have MIJ KL. Also, sorry. We try and stick to some stick to the same names. OK, so we can, if you take this R matrix, you can move part of the right-hand side onto the left-hand side. And namely, what you'll see is like the opposite. So you'll get a commutator is equal to, so that's actually corresponding to this term. Because on the right-hand side, there's some stuff involving this identity. But we also should see some things involving a denominator, something with division. And here it's possible there's this sign. Something divided by z minus z prime. And hopefully, this is right. It's a sort of funny looking relation at first. So what happens? I have this. It's either this or with a minus, so it's not going to be so far off. the indices actually get swapped. So before it was I with J, R with S. Now they exchange. That's because of this factor here. And then we should see the same thing, but where the variables are switched. So this minus I, S, Z prime, M, R, J, Z. So that's the right-hand side. OK. Does that make sense? OK. But we can actually do a little bit more, even. So with these transfer matrices, we expanded things in powers of 1 over Z. And we haven't actually done that yet. We haven't done that yet with our matrix. So here we can also expand this monodromy matrix in powers of 1 over z. And we can rewrite everything in terms of the coefficients. If we expand, mij of z in powers of 1 over z. So what we should see, actually, this is skipping possibly a step, but so there's going to be a constant term, and then something times 1 over z, something times 1 over z squared, and so on. Here it turns out that the constant term is a delta function. And then we'll have some higher coefficients. And I'll follow the notation that Kevin chose, and now switch these to t's. 0 times 1 over z plus t ij 1. So there's going to be some extra indexing which tells you what power of 1 over z you're looking at, 1 over z squared, and so on. I hope that's sort of clear. Make sense?
Do small t's correspond to?
I'm sorry?
What do the t's correspond to?
The t's, okay. The way you should think is, maybe this is the mathy way of saying it. I don't know if it'll make it more confusing, but remember that this is really some linear transformation on the Hilbert space. And if you actually wrote it out as a matrix, you would find that because of this 1 over z, all of the matrix entries are stuff involving 1 over z. So maybe you see 1 over z squared and so on. So what you can do is you can think of expanding the matrix. Okay, just an example. This might not be what it looks like, but you can imagine a matrix which looks like this. So the entries are actually, see. I don't know. This is just for a hypothetical situation. It kind of looks something like this, but it's going to be actually more symmetric than that. If you had such a thing, then you could expand linearly in the powers of z. You'd see, so what's the constant term? I put the identity. There's something times 1 over z, which is going to have a 1 here, 1, 1. So for this choice, it looks like that. And 1 over z squared. I only put one of them, so. One. I don't know. This is not any specific matrix, I just, as an example. So, excuse me. If you actually pick the K and write the transfer and monotonomy matrices down, we could expand them also. And so these T's, we're switching from M to T because it's more historically RTT, as I said, but those are just whatever these matrices are. So there are going to be some matrices. So each T, I, J, I don't know. What notation is he using here? Say N. So this is the coefficient. If you look at our notation, this is the coefficient of 1 over z to the n plus 1. So each of these is a constant. In other words, doesn't depend on z, linear transformation on the same Hilbert space. That's sort of helpful though. Okay. And the idea is yes.
Where is the square term when yes?
Oh, here? Sorry, also just to be clear. This is this minus that, right?
No, I mean you should get actually four terms, right?
Yes. Yeah. You should get four terms, and I think what will happen is, let's see.
There's data.
Four. I think one of them will get canceled. So you're right. So this factor here will contribute something which looks like identity plus something involving 1 over z. identity plus 1 over z. So that's 4 terms altogether. We moved 1 to the other side to get the commutator. And we're saying that all that's left is 2 things. So yeah, where'd the other one go? Offhand, I don't actually remember, but it will work out. It's just a mess of indices. Oops. Oh, yes, sorry. Now I'm sorry, remember? The easier way, which I've just released now, is instead to do this like this. I sort of said this in words, but the other way to write this relation comes from showing something like, let me just erase the variables a little bit, that if you started here, we could pull this guy all the way through, and you'll get something like the same picture, but where the crossing happens at the bottom. So you could try and convince yourself of that. It's a very similar argument. But and in this case, then, what we would see instead is R, I'll write it this way, R, something involving monodromy matrix 1. Second one is MMR. And now there's 2 terms from the expansion. Here there are 2, so that's 4. We're comparing 2 terms on one side with 2 terms on the other. And that RTT relation here, this rewriting comes from putting half them on one side and half the other. So in other words, what they should tell us is that somehow we had to use unitarity. So the other term is somehow going to cancel itself. I hope that clarifies a little. OK. Right. So OK, I haven't gotten my explicit example. Now it's not looking like I will. What's the point is we can re-expand. We can expand both sides here in this way. And we can try and write down what sort of relations do these constant things satisfy. And they happen to be related to a very interesting algebraic object called the Yangian. So by our relation, I mean that one. We can get relations satisfied by these coefficients T, I, J, N. And this is sort of a mess. But I think we should probably write it down. So here you go. I'll use Kevin's variables, so just so we don't screw anything up. So he's using a slightly different notation. So it sort of makes sense. If you expand the left-hand side out, you're going to see things which look possibly like this. OK, I've changed I to K and L to J and R and S with I and J. Sorry about that. But this is coming from the left-hand side. And if we expand the right-hand side, it's going to be a bit more messy. But we can do it. And you'll see the following thing, KJ. So what will happen is actually these coefficients, we're going to start changing which coefficient appears. So one of the things you'll see is stuff where the two indices here, these coefficients have added, but with this extra bit. And we'll see the same thing, but sort of the opposite. So that's the sort of leading terms, in a sense.
Where's the M?
Pardon me?
Where is the M?
Oh, Yes, that's a very good question. Thank you. L. There. And then we see a sum of some things. And this is a little bit messy looking, but you see a sum over R such that R plus 1 is less than both M and N. And then you see some other thing. Okay. I'm almost certain that I'll get this backwards. It looks very similar. So something with K, J, I, L, but now they both have separate contributions, not just the delta function. M plus N minus 1 minus R. And then the same thing where this index appears there. Yes.
In the second term, you really want Tij instead of Til?
Yes. Yeah, maybe it would have been more symmetric to put the delta kl here. The point is, this is just a number, right? So we could put it equally well here if we wanted. That'd make things maybe look a little bit nicer. So every term on the right-hand side always is going to look like some matrix coefficient for the kj monodromy matrix times some coefficient for the IL monodromy matrix.
Shouldn't it be like TIL?
TIL, not TIJ.
Oh, I did it again. Sorry. Thanks. I missed the point of your question. Did I get any of the other ones wrong?
KJ then.
Yes, thanks. Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks, guys. They're tedious to write down. OK, and I've gone way too slow to explain the significance of this, but these are sort of interesting relations. These correspond to something called the Yangian. Yangian for Yang. Because this is Yang's R matrix. And well, that happens to be, ends up being a very interesting thing. So this is saying that the this vertex model with that choice of R matrix has some sort of Yangian symmetry. So there's some extra stuff going on involving these monodromy matrices that we can actually use these relations and this Yangian to solve the model. And I'm disappointed to say I won't do that today, but.
Are you lecturing tomorrow?
Pardon me?
Are you lecturing tomorrow? Or Kevin is taking over.
I think Kevin is taking over again. So, yes. So sorry, I'm already slightly over time. So, yeah, I'll just try and convince you that this ends up being a very interesting fact, and leave it at that. So, it was a pleasure to lecture to you. Sorry for not actually explaining why this is significant, but. But yes, Kevin will take back over starting tomorrow, I believe. If there is class tomorrow. So.
I hope so.
OK. He said he's back Thursday, so thank you.